You're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com, your everything resource for the security industry. Hello, Security InfoWatch listeners. It's Tuesday, December 12, 2006. It's been a while since we've put on a podcast due to a little bit of technical difficulties and a bit about being focused with some new things we've got going on here, like the Buyer's Guide, and just working up to get you guys some great columns every day and every week. Well, this week we are back in this chilly December morning. We have an interview to feature with Holly Stone. Holly Stone is with Hinman Consulting Engineers, where she's Director of Operations for the New York City office, and she's also a trained first responder. Back at As Is, she put in a presentation of findings from some demonstrations looking at building hardening. And we're going to speak with her today regarding anti-terrorism and engineering to harden buildings. So we're going to talk about window coverings, building design, all the sort of things that unfortunately are in your realm of work today as we embrace this new future. You guys had done some live demonstrations,
right,
on hardening of blasting buildings that had been hardened, correct?
We've done a number of demonstrations, both for blast effects and also what my presentation was on. We did demonstrations with firefighters, mm-hmm, for how they're going to operate in a building that has been hardened for blast or ballistics or forced entry. For more typical threats, you know, for instance, like if there's a fire, you know, how does the hardening of a structure impact their more day-to-day type operations?
In terms of that, what is the general thought from the business community that's hardening these buildings? Are they aware of these challenges today?
The information is beginning to get out there. What happened was I'm very involved both with BLAST in working with Hinman and designing buildings to resist terrorist attacks and explosions, but I'm also very involved with the FEMA Urban Search and Rescue Program and the Corps of Engineers Urban Search and Rescue Program. And, you know, the sort of combination of the two, it occurred to me that when we're hardening these buildings to make things stay out, that it may be a detrimental impact to firefighters. And so I worked with the GSA and the Department of Homeland Security and then a number of different organizations to put together demonstrations, first of all, to see, you know, if it is even an issue. And then based on that, we developed a training program for fire departments across the country, and the General Services Administration has created a web-based training program that's open to any firefighter who wants to take it.
In terms of hardening buildings today, this is somewhat new for a lot of businesses.
Right.
Certainly since 9/11. What are some of the typical methods of hardening a building? I assume most of this is done in new construction.
Well, actually, it can be done in a number of places. Just to give you a little bit of history, is that, you know, the first time that we really looked at hardening a building for anti-terrorism protection was after the 83 embassy bombings in Beirut. And Eve Hinman, the president of our company, was instrumental in helping the Department of State write their guidelines for blast resistance for embassy buildings around the world. And then what's happened after every major event against a U.S. target, there has been another agency or another group of people who have been interested and who are beginning to retrofit or build new buildings to these types of standards. And you're absolutely right. After September 11th, it just became a much more prominent design criteria. And it went from the government sector to the private sector after September 11th. And so that's a major turn in the industry. Prior to September 11th, it was really only government institutions who were looking at this.
Holly, physically, what's changing in the buildings? I think a lot of our industry is, of course, very familiar with window coverings.
Right.
Obviously, because they're easy to apply, or relatively easy to apply,
right.
One of the more, less expensive ways. But in terms of the actual structure itself and the outer perimeter defenses of it.
Yeah, there are a number of things that can be done. And I think you asked the question also, you know, retrofit versus new construction. And the answer to that is they're both doing it, but you have different solutions for that, for each element, whether it's a retrofit of an existing building or it's design of a new. On the retrofit end, there are actually more and more products that are coming on the market. And there's been a lot of transfer of technology from, for instance, the seismic industry when they did retrofits for seismic events. For instance, columns. Columns are some of your most, you know, they're the most critical elements in your building, and so those are the things that you absolutely want to make sure are able to resist an explosion if it's a close-in type weapon. And you can, you know, you can either, you can put more concrete around it, you can put steel around it. There are fabrics, they're called fiber-reinforced polymers, or FRPs, that you can wrap around concrete columns. So there's a whole host of tools in the toolbox to retrofit existing structural members. You can do the same types of things for your floor systems or your beams. And then the big thing that you also look at is the building envelope. The building envelope can either, you know, help you by keeping blast pressures out of the building and, you know, remaining intact as long as possible, or it can hurt the occupants if it's very fragile and it, you know, throws in and becomes flying objects that the people are inside, as well as letting blast pressures come in. You know, building envelopes are absolutely not designed in a typical building to resist blast pressures.
And when you say envelope, I mean, we're mainly talking about the outer walls? Or
yeah, the skin of the building.
Okay.
It's, you know, sort of that environmental barrier that's keeping, you know, the wind and the rain and the heat and the cold out.
Right.
Now we're trying to use that to keep the blast pressures out and to provide a protective layer around the people and the occupants in the building itself. And on an existing building, those, you know, they're definitely not designed for that. And you talk about window retrofits, and we always really stress that it's not a good idea to, for instance, just, you know, put film on your windows without knowing what's going to happen to the rest of your building envelope or your structure itself, because, you know, your windows may not be your biggest concern, and it may not be the best deployment of your resources, you know, your funding, to just, you know, haphazardly, without thinking it through, just apply a window film instead of saying, oh, well, you know, now I've applied this window film, my glass isn't going to shard, but my wall's not going to hold up. So, you know, what did you really get by doing that?
Right, okay.
And so we always recommend that a building owner take a holistic approach to it and, you know, first understand what the potential threats around their building are, and then do actually a blast vulnerability assessment, which is an analytical assessment of the building to be used as a decision-making tool. You know, are your columns the most vulnerable? Is there a parking garage under your building that makes you vulnerable? Is your loading dock next to a critical asset or, you know, a highly populated area of your building? It's best to sort of sit down and think about it thoughtfully and spend a little extra time and resources planning, and then you can make decisions for design of your building. And generally, you know, the optimal solution is going to include security monitoring. It's going to include restricted access, and it's going to include hardening. And it should be, in an ideal situation, it should be all three together. And that's going to get the most effective solution for the money that's available.
Now, you mentioned a window typing system.
Yeah.
And that would be useful for the firefighters, for the first responders. Can you go a little more depth on that?
Okay, so what we did is, what we found through the demonstrations with the fire departments is that there are, you know, we have an array of window solutions. Either, you know, we can put film on an existing window system and we can attach it in a few different ways, or we can put a blast curtain in. Or we can install a secondary window system that's blast resistant. So you let your existing window system fail, and then interior to it, before the occupants, you have another window system that becomes the blast resistant element. And then new buildings have different types and thicknesses depending on what they're defending against. And then there's hurricane windows and ballistic windows. So there's this whole array of solutions out there. And what we found is that the solutions affected the firefighters' operations in different ways and to different degrees. And so we culled it down, and we came up with three basic types. And we called them, you know, type one is hand tools, type two is hand tools / power tools, and type three is power tools. And what we really want to do is not tell the responders what these windows are defending against. We just want to tell them what they need to do to get through them.
Okay.
And so that was a real security concern, because, you know, the last thing you want to do is start advertising what you've defended against.
Right. That's drill always through me. Don't try to hit me with a hammer.
Exactly. Right, exactly.
Well done.
Yeah, or, you know, we're defending against this size weapon,
right,
bomb, or this size caliber, ballistics, or, you know, anything like that. You don't want to put that information out there. So you want to make it as sort of obscure as possible on that level, and yet still give the firefighters the information that they need. And what we found is, you know, it's an interesting thing about the fire service in the United States is that it's a very decentralized service industry. And so there's not one way that everybody does the same thing. They're generally similar, but every department has their own standard operating procedures. And so some departments never break windows. They, you know, we talk to them and they say, oh, well, you know, this doesn't affect us. We never do that. And some departments, you know, they consider the windows part of their everyday operation. So it depends on what they, how they operate on a regular basis. But what we found was the most important, and that the firefighters were the most, oftentimes the most interested in, is getting a firefighter out if something happens and they need to get out of a building quickly. Because these windows, even the lowest level of these windows, takes a little bit more effort for a firefighter to get out. And if they're in a in a fire environment and you know their air is low, or the heat is getting too hot, they need to know that it's going to take them longer to get out than it would have in a regular window system.
So would they know going in, or?
That's the plan. So, you know, and again, so because it's such a decentralized, group of organizations, it's harder to get the information out. But there's a number of ways that can get out, and it's sort of attacking it from a several different areas. The first is that we're trying to train firefighters to know sort of signs and symptoms. Oh, it's a government building. I'm pretty certain that there's going to be something special about the windows, and then when they're doing their pre-fire planning, they can ask the questions. Or they can look at the windows and, you know, look and see if there's a film attachment, or if there's been retrofits to mullions. And those are going to be telltale signs for them that these windows are going to be a little bit different. The next thing is to work with the manufacturers of window systems and owners of buildings that are putting these in. And when we write specifications now, we always require the window installers to supply at least 4 window systems to the local fire department so that they can train on the actual windows that are going into these buildings. So, you know, the theory is that they'll be able to set these windows up and then see what type of tools are going to allow them to get through and how it might change how they operate on a regular basis.
Gotcha.
And then the third thing is that, a lot of times window retrofits or, you know, installation of a film isn't really a permittable action. And so what we want to try to do is also inform the local authorities who would be reviewing permits or requiring permits that these are the types of things that also get permitted. So then the information can get to the local fire department and they know ahead of time.
Okay. So kind of proposing that, you know, building hardening might be a permitted solution.
Well, we're not really looking beyond the window systems here, mm-hmm. but when you install a laminated window system, or window retrofits, that a permit would be required.
Well, it's certainly something that happens a lot more then many would think, you know, this is, you know, a lot of times after break-ins even, you know, small businesses will do this. So, you know, they'll upgrade their alarm system or buy one if they didn't have one before, and then, of course, you know, maybe use a window film.
So. Yep. And, you know, the other thing that we're finding is exactly that, as we were talking to a lot of the vendors, is that they're using these films and these laminated glass for the smash and grab type thing. So it makes it harder for somebody to break into your house through your window systems. And so a lot of, you know, we're talking to vendors who are installing these windows in high-end households, you know, not in hurricane zones. You know, it wasn't a blast event. It was just they were trying to provide better security at their house.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
How, like, you know, obviously a lot of our audience is day-to-day in corporate security and may be considering hardening windows.
Right.
In terms, what are the questions that they should ask their vendors or their installing dealers about these window hardening systems? And, you know, questions of business impact, that technology concerns.
Right. Well, I think the first thing that they should do is that that if they go to a window vendor and the vendor says, oh, yeah, that's great, we'll just attach a film to your windows and it'll be good, without recommending that an analysis be run to make sure that the walls and the mullions can and the frames can hold those loads, I think that they should ask for that type of service. And whether it's going to the vendors first or going to a consultant first and somebody to help them think through the process before they start spending their money, I think that's a really important thing to do. I think that there's some things to think about as far as operations. Some of the solutions make operable windows inoperable. Is that going to affect their operations? A lot of buildings use window access for their window cleaning, for instance, exterior window cleaning. They need to really know what's being defended against. I think one of the biggest dangers in this new industry is unrealistic expectations of the consumer. I think it's really important that that owners and security personnel are informed consumers, and they know, you know, that if you have a large size bomb at the curb of your building, you know, there's not much you're going to be able to do to your glass to protect it in the close-in area. As you get further away on your building, whether it's around the backside or around up the face of the building, then you're going to be able to protect the occupants. But when you have a large bomb close to your building, the close-in area, your windows will break. I mean, it's unless you have a very sophisticated design.
Don't expect these to be foolproof.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing. You know, what we're building is nothing is in this industry is bomb-proof. You're mitigating the effects.
So that was Hollis Stone, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully you enjoyed that great primer on building hardening and when and how to use window coverings. I think Hollis really brings up some interesting points there that it's not appropriate just to jump on the gun and throw up a bunch of window coverings without thinking of how this impacts the first responder community, how it impacts the safety of your own employees who might need to escape in the event of a fire event. So keep this in mind as you go forward and looking at building hardening, and hopefully this is something you don't have to consider and is only something that State Department of State buildings are needing to look at. But certainly with changing threat vectors, this may be something on your plate in the next couple of years. Until next time, thanks for joining us on SIW Radio, our SecurityInfoWatch.com podcast series. And check back on SecurityInfoWatch.com for all the latest news and information. And please enjoy our forums at forums.securityinfowatch.com, where you can discuss these and other security concerns with your peers. Thank you. We'll be right back.